Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. Mike Boot and Dave Martinez. It's the first Monday of the NFL season. We got games to talk about. We got games to review. Players to talk about. Early waiver wire. Hand-wringing and hair-pulling. Sorry, but this is the way it goes. Tennessee had a rough one yesterday. The Steelers and the Browns had a weird one. And the Bears might have had the toughest loss of all, which happened after I fell asleep. I tried, Dane. I tried. I did 5 hours of radio and TV yesterday. So I was up early. And
those Sunday night games. I know you were cheating on me.
Those Sunday night games are never easy for me. For the last 7 years, I've been doing Sunday morning radio on NFL Game Day, and I did it here. I did it for us yesterday in studio from 8 to 1. But, you know, that's like an up at 5:15, catch a 6 o'clock train kind of thing, get there early, prep, and then get on with your day. So, you know, by the time that night game hits, I'm pretty beat, and I really did my best. I threw down some caffeine and tried to get through it, but I fell asleep for the last touchdown. Obviously watched it this morning, but really a rough loss for the Bears because they dominated so much in the first half, and then they just couldn't put it away, and you wonder if that's going to be a bugaboo for this team. But the guy's the best. There's nothing else I can say. He's the best. He's basically playing. I was texting with a friend this morning. I said, man, he said, when you think Rodgers can't do something to top himself, he does something even more amazing. And I was like, yeah, and he was hurt. He's like, he wasn't just hurt. He was basically playing on one leg. They showed him dropping back in the first half before he got hurt, and then him dropping back in the second half. He could barely move. It was basically he was stiff-legged. With that leg that got, it's probably a sprained knee, I would imagine. Hopefully it's not worse damage. But if it was very serious, he wouldn't have been able to get back out there. But the guy leads him to 3 touchdowns in the second half, and they win the game.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, you know, there's a reason we call him probably the best player in all of football. Has a bad first half where the talk was about, oh my goodness, Khalil Mack forced fumble, you know, interceptions, touchdowns. What a great trade it was for the Chicago Bears, what this does for what wasn't already top 10 defense. But then, you know, Aaron Rodgers works his magic, finishes with 286 yards and 3 touchdowns, including the game winner to Randall Cobb. And here's the thing, like, what I think is funny.
You feel better about Cobb now? We had a lot of cold water thrown on our Randall Cobb.
No, because, I mean, it was just one big play. I mean, I guess outside of that, he did have 8 catches. But that is my other point. You know, for a month, for a month and a half, we were talking about, hey, Jake Kumerow and Thomas Scantling and Equanimeous St. Brown and Jamon Moore. But when it comes down to it, Randall Cobb gets 9 catches. Davante Adams gets 5 for 88. And Geronimo Allison is also a thing with a beautiful touchdown catch. You saw when they needed kind of in the second half to start getting going and move the chains. He looked Geronimo Allison's way for the better part of a drive to get out of the shadow of their own goalpost. And so that continues to be the way that the Packers' bread is buttered. I would be a little bit worried.
To your point about Geronimo Allison, sorry to interrupt, all three receivers had touchdowns. Yep. All three were really nice plays. Allison made a nice catch. Adams made a crazy move to make Prince Amukamara miss. And then Cobb with the 75-yard catch and run. So I really like that receiving core. And the fact that they were wanting to trade Randall Cobb is even more interesting. I know he carries a pretty hefty salary for what they feel like they'd be getting out of it. But now, why would Rodgers want him to move on when he knows he still has that asset in Randall Cobb?
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think part of it was also maybe the injury concerns. There was a lot of people were down on Cobb. I was among them. I think for me, it was more like I was excited about the potential of Geronimo Allison as like a 24-year-old kid being able to take that step forward. But here's what I want to say real quick, Mike. A lot of people were high on things like Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones, you know, going into this draft. And I think what people forgot is that with Aaron Rodgers under center, the Green Bay Packers throw the ball. This is a passing offense. You know, I know it's like an epiphany, but people really forget. You know, they're like, oh, Jamal Williams looked good last year. Yeah, that was when DeShone Kizer was at quarterback and they were trying to game manage. That is not the case anymore. So I would have cause for pause for both Williams and Jones. And then listen, on the other side of things, this Bears defense does look like it's going to be relatively solid, but the offense looks like it's still maybe a work in progress, right? I don't know. I mean, what happened was Aaron Rodgers. Sometimes you got to tip your cap, Mike, to, you know, an MVP on the other side. That's why they're an MVP.
Fair. I think
you know.
Fair.
I think on the
I guess the only disturbing thing on the Trubisky was Trubisky. They were just so conservative in the second half.
And like, well, they parked the bus up 20-0.
Yeah, well, don't do that against Aaron Rodgers. It's like he's a new coach and all that kind of stuff. But, man, if there's anything we've learned from these really against these really good quarterbacks, don't do that. Don't do that against Brady and Rodgers because they will.
Even if you're up 24-3 in the Super Bowl, even if you're up 24-3 in the Super Bowl,
if you're up 28-3, if you're up in the, if you're up and you have two timeouts at the end of the first half and 55 seconds, don't do that. Let's not kick field goals. Let's score touchdowns. And at one point, they showed the stats because Rodgers was really – it was a heat check time for Rodgers, and they showed the comparison by half. And
Trubisky
was 8 of 11 for 26 yards. I was like, what are they doing? Let's just move it down the field. They spent $1 billion on all these receivers. Let's go for it. But, again, I think what you said is fair. You just got to tip your cap and to the victors go the spoils as far as that's concerned. You know, the targets really went Randall Cobb's way. He does go 9 for 142, Devontae Adams 5 for 88, and Geronimo Allison 5 for 69. On the flip side, Allen Robinson made a really great catch at one point, a 33-yard catch, 4 for 61. He goes, I mean, I just am going to get worried about the Bears offense, which I've been skeptical of all preseason because of Trubisky. And I'm not judging him from one game, but I'm saying that 35 pass attempts for 171 yards isn't going to get it done.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And the other thing, Mike, you know how I have that term, the fantasy herd, right? And I think that is what this can develop into as well. You know, Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, you see Tariq Cohen out of the backfield. Trey Burton, only one catch for 15 yards. I found it interesting that when they had a big fourth down at the end of the game, the guy who gets the target was Anthony Miller right after, you know, Collinsworth is like, you're going to go to whoever their best option is at this point. And they threw a 50-50 ball for Anthony Miller in that situation. But it seems to me like this passing offense, and we've said this in the preseason, you know, with all these new pieces. We said the same thing about San Francisco that may take time to gel. And I'm a little bit worried about Allen Robinson as a week-to-week back-end wide receiver too. I think he may be more of a wide receiver three because he is part of a fantasy herd in Chicago, Mike.
Yeah. I listened to you guys in the last hour. I thought you had some really good points about games. One of the games I was really interested in watching was the Giants-Jaguars. I know you talked about it in terms of Fournette's injury and who is it going to be serious. We don't know yet. We'll get a diagnosis on it, but you don't like those soft tissue injuries. They can they tend to linger. But so I tried to talk myself on several occasions about T.J. Yeldon because here is the reality, and obviously we'll get to James Conner in a minute, but a lot of people, and I'll raise my hand and say mea culpa on this, focused on handcuffs for certain guys, in particular James Conner, which I talked about quite a bit, Austin Eckler, a lot for Melvin Gordon, and Chase Edmonds was even talked about quite a bit for David Johnson, just as a make sure you have David Johnson. Dallas didn't really seem to have a clear guy, and I actually thought that Yeldon was being underserved in drafts, but seven teams, I don't have him. So I have to say it's my fault too. I did take Corey Grant in a draft, maybe even two, because I thought he might be the guy to back him up, and Yeldon would continue with a modified Duke Johnson role, if that makes sense, a little bit of pass catching, maybe a few more carries. But, you know, I regret not exploring it a little bit more, because I do feel like T.J. Yeldon could be the guy that, not for a whole season, but for 2-3 weeks, could pick up the pace and be a 15-plus touch guy.
Yep. I think T.J. Yeldon definitely belongs in that conversation.
And he was 17 yesterday, for the record, yeah.
Yeah, with the best handcuffs, you know, in the league, and a lot of times. And to be quite honest, with Leonard Fournette's injury history and injury risk, he's probably even, you know, Yeldon is probably even more sought after than some of these other big boy handcuffs where the lead back does not have the same injury history. T.J. Yeldon going for 14 carries, 51 yards, and he's also something of a weapon in the pass game as well. Had the receiving touchdown, 3 for 18, and combined also another thing for Yeldon in his kind of a mark in the plus side is, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars scheme is to run the ball and play defense. Now, if Leonard Fournette gets hurt, which he did yesterday, all of a sudden that doesn't mean that, you know, the Jags are going to put the game on the arm of Blake Bortles. They are still going to have the same identity, and that is going to be running the ball. So T.J. Yeldon had 17 touches last week. If Leonard Fournette is out for any period of time, we'll get an update on that and that hamstring as we move along, but I'm not encouraged by him because of his history of soft tissue injuries. You know, T.J. Yeldon having, you know, around 20 touches is no far cry from reality if Fournette is out. So I think if Yeldon is out there and available, and if you see that you know, Fournette is, you know, going to be struggling with this on a kind of week to week designation, I would spend a good 35-40% of my fad budget on T.J. Yeldon, because Leonard Fournette is injury prone.
Yeah, 12 touches for Fournette yesterday was a good thing. I guess the part that's a bummer is there was a point made of how he lost weight. And I can tell you that very, very specifically, Le'Veon Bell, from his rookie year to his second year in the league, there was a noticeable difference in the weight that he lost and how much mobility he gained there. You know, probably an NFL training program. He was playing at Michigan State upwards of 240, Le'Veon Bell was. And going into his second year, he lost basically 15 to 20 pounds, made himself a little bit shiftier. He's gotten better shape. And I hope the same for Fournette. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that that isn't the case. And he could very well be in good shape, and he just tweaked a hamstring. I mean, these things do happen regardless of what weight you are. We see speedster wide receivers with tweaked hamstrings all the time. So it's not necessarily that he's carrying too much weight. But, you know, he doesn't get in the end zone. The one thing I will say, though, they are trying to run first. But I talked a lot during the preseason about how they were 50-50 on play calls last year, pass attempts to rushing attempts at 527 apiece last year. They ran the most plays in the league. Yesterday, 33 throws, 28 runs. So, yes, they do try to run, but they needed to put the ball in the air a little bit yesterday as they were on the road, and the Giants kept it close. I had the Giants as an upset pick of the week. I thought they were in the mix there, and that deflected pass at the end of the game that gets returned for a pick six. A tough one for Eli. It's not standard scratch-your-head throw from Eli. It's just a bad break on a tip pass.
Yeah. That's how it goes sometimes. You know, sometimes you throw a pick that should be picked off, you know, like look at it when Aaron Rodgers threw right before the Cobb play, you know, Fuller should have had that to pick to end the game. And sometimes the ball gets tipped, you know, and, that's why, you know, like PFF, they grade everything, not in the output, but on the inputs. The one thing I am a little bit worried about on the Giants side, and we made this point a bunch, Blue, it is what kind of share of opportunity is Evan Ingram going to get? You know, we talked about how Odell is going to get his. We know Barkley got his with his 106 yards and a touchdown, a very nice 60-plus yard touchdown run. Evan Ingram only 2 catches for 18 yards. This was a narrative for me going into the season around Evan Ingram, and I am concerned that with all the other weapons there, his target share may fall off dramatically.
I don't doubt that. I didn't draft Evan Ingram in any league. I wasn't sure enough that he could get back to where he was. And to your point that you made on the previous show, there was obviously 4 receivers got hurt and there was nobody left. So obviously he was going to see a much bigger percentage of targets last season while that was going on. I liked Odell going into yesterday. I didn't care about the matchup because I didn't think Ramsey was going to blanket him, and he goes 11 for 111, proving that he's Odell Beckham. I know he doesn't get into the end zone. Some of you might be slightly disappointed, but in your PPR leagues, he has a 20-point day, and you can't complain. So I'm with you. It's why, and especially where he was being drafted, I thought Evan Ingram's price was too high, and he wouldn't necessarily get a return on it. I really did draft late. I can tell you my Scott Fishbowl team, where there's a bump on tight ends, I really waited, and now I'm in trouble because I got Cameron Brate, and who didn't have a catch yesterday, and I got some other guys, and I'm getting zeros out of my tight ends right now. But overall, I felt pretty good about that team. By the way, we'll get into a couple of our scores, a couple of our players. Dean and I are in a high-stakes league, and I think we're going to – I know we're going to come out with a high score for the week.
Sure.
I'll review that. In the next segment, we're going to do – we'll take a review of all the targets from yesterday.
I'd love to review that. Yeah.
So you folks have an understanding of exactly how many balls were thrown to people not named Julio Jones. We know he's thrown the ball 19 times. So we'll go over that. We'll see where the market share goes. But one other game to do before the break is Pats and Texans. So I know you didn't get a chance to talk about that too much, but obviously we had Tom Brady there, very efficient, 26 of 39, three scores. Weather wasn't great, but three scores. He had a really rough interception, which may not have been his fault. Deshaun Watson had a really tough day, 17-34, 176 and a touchdown. So the Deshaun Watson party did not get started yesterday, Dane.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, I like Deshaun Watson as much as the next man. Okay, but we saw him in what, six starts last year? And in those six games, the Texans went 3-3, you know, despite this, you know, Haley's Comet that was Deshaun Watson. You know, there were people that were taking him as like the second or third quarterback off the board. If you think that was automatically going to happen in the kind of bell curve of it all, you have to also think it's possible that the league is going to adjust a little bit to Deshaun Watson. 50% completion percentage is not going to get it done. I mean, he found DeAndre Hopkins eight times for 78 yards, but, you know, I thought and I said that there is a chance that, you know, Watson regresses here. There is still that bad offensive line as well. Yeah, this is why we wait on quarterback.
My biggest concern there is what we saw, even in a limited amount of time last year, one touchdown, two turnovers, and I just worry that that's going to be the case for him a lot. I think there'll be some spectacular games, but I don't know at the NFL level if he's going to be able to take care of the ball just yet. I mean, he's still a developing player, but I'm saying right now, I think he just may see a lot of turnovers. 19 touches for Rex Burkhead, 7 catches for 66 and a touchdown to none other than Philip Dorsett. If any of you have that, raise your hands. I expect it to be pretty quiet. We'll come back. We'll take a look at targets. And Dane and I will brag a little bit about our high-stakes league. It's Mike and Dane on FST. Back after the break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build and optimize lineups for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Back on FST. If you want to reach out to us this morning, please do so on Twitter at FNTS Fire Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett, and Dane Martinez is at Spit and Speeds, S-P-E-E-D-Z. You know, BetDSI is celebrating 20 years as the industry's biggest and safest betting site. They have great customer service and fast, easy payment of winnings. You can play virtually every sport at BetDSI with hundreds of wagering options, including live in-game wagering at all major sporting events, where you can make your play at any time during the game. So using the promo code FNTSY, BetDSI is offering up to a $1,000 bonus on your first deposit. So use promo code FNTSY and try BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com, Promo code FNTSY. Head on over and start winning today. So we had a we'll talk about it a little bit later, but we had $1 million winner. That's a Daily Roto subscriber, so it's one of the it's our DFS arm of our company. So we're very excited about that. It's the fifth time that that's happened, and the lineup is filthy and really interesting. We'll go through it step by step. I know Dane did it in the last hour, but I want to make sure all the listeners get a chance to get in on the DFS glory that may come to you at DailyRoto.com. So one thing before we get to the targets, because you and I were talking during the break about Tyreek Hill, and it's been a worry of mine. I'll be honest. I do not have Tyreek Hill in any league. I had some reservations about Pat Mahomes, who I do have a piece of. I have no Kelce this year. I definitely don't have Watkins. And I don't have any Kareem Hunt. It was always – I had a few debates on Kareem Hunt. Obviously, Dane and I – well, I mean, you may not know this, but Dane and I had a shot at him, and we took Melvin Gordon instead. So far, so good. And in other leagues, I just went a different route. I went, you know, Alvin Kamara one time. I went Christian McCaffrey one time over him. I may end up regretting that, but nonetheless, that's where I went. So I don't have any Kareem Hunt this year in my seasonals. I don't have any Tyreek Hill. And my concern about Tyreek Hill isn't that he wasn't going to be effective, but early in Mike Wallace's career, he was a speedster. He had world-class speed, and Ben would just throw bombs to Mike Wallace, and he was scoring at an absurd pace. And it has been my concern that at some point, the faucet is going to get shut off with these long touchdowns. And we even talked about, I think, what was it, like 10 of his last 13 touchdowns were from outside of 30 yards, something crazy like that. And then, boom, he does it again yesterday. He has a couple of long touchdowns. One's on a kick return. One is on a slant pass, a catch and run. And then he had a nice little shovel pass there. So Tyreek Hill really went nuts yesterday. 7 for 169, 2 touchdowns. And Patty Mahomes only threw the ball 27 times. They were playing with a lead a lot of the game, but 256 and 4 touchdowns. You'll take that every day of the week.
Yeah, and here's the thing. And some of them aren't even really throws, you know. I'm watching the game, you know, with some people who are not as sharp as you and I, right? And I was like, oh, there's Patty Mahomes. And somebody was like, oh, wait, I thought that was a run. And I was like, no. They're going to get credit for a pass for that. And there's going to be so many of those little pop passes, little wannabe jet sweeps that Patty Mahomes gets some credit for as well. Here's the thing for me. I take your point, Mike, about Mike Wallace and some other guys who have been just straight burners, right, and stretch the field for a long time and how the league kind of adjusts. What I do think is different in this case is that when Mike Wallace and others, those are like vertical, okay? Those are stretching the field on deep passes. Tyreek Hill is more horizontal, right? It's the bubble screens. It's jet sweeps. It's short crosses. I mean, the 50-yard touchdown pass, you know, was not down the field to Tyreek Hill. It was cutting across. Exactly. And then Tyreek Hill just takes it to the house with his speed. We also saw in the preseason, you know, how he is able to get behind the defense with the famed 70-yard throw out of Patty Mahomes. And so I think the key that's really going to help Mahomes and Tyreek Hill is this Andy Reid scheme, you know, and quite honestly, Mike, you know, the Chiefs are playing like a Big 12 team. So Patty Mahomes should be comfortable.
It is really Big 12-esque, especially that little. That little shovel pass to Tyreek
pass or whatever it is,
down near the goal line. That is, you see that a lot in college, and I think utilizing plays like that makes sense when you have a player like that. For those Travis Kelce owners that are bummed out, you just got to play the long game on this one. They scored 38 points and he had one catch, so I don't think you can freak out about it. It's just a bad day at the office. Chargers have 2 100-yard receivers with Allen and Gordon. Allen scores a nice touchdown. And Phil Rivers, as you said, put it up 50 times, 424 and 3 touchdowns. So he came through. He was a very popular DFS pick, and he came through. Mm-hmm. Not as much as Ryan Fitzpatrick and Drew Brees, but he still came through. So let's move over to the targets because we want to get into that. Gives you a sense of how market share looked in week one. We've talked about Julio Jones 19 times. He was targeted the other night for 10 catches. How about Mike Thomas? Mike Thomas, do you know last year how many passes that he dropped? He had like 150 targets or something like that. I can't remember.
The way you say it, I'll say that it was really, really low. I'll say he dropped one.
One. one.
Yeah, all right.
All year. So yesterday he has 17 targets, and he caught 16 passes. I can't say that he dropped the one. I didn't see the entire game.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a drop.
Might have just been a misfire. So Antonio Brown, 16 targets. Odell Beckham, 15 targets. Jarvis Landry, 15 targets. Very encouraging for you Cleveland Brown owners. I really thought they were going to heavily utilize Landry yesterday, so he does see 15 targets. The one that you mentioned during the break, the two that you mentioned during the break, Corey Davis with 13 targets, as was Melvin Gordon with 13 targets. Melvin Gordon sometimes not thought to be the pass catcher extraordinaire that some of these other guys are, but he sees 13 targets, 9 catches, 102 yards. Austin Eckler caught 5 passes for 87 and a touchdown. So obviously they're not going to throw the ball 50 times every game, but Melvin Gordon, a really big part of the passing offense as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Mike. They're not going to throw the ball 50 times a game, but I think Phillip Rivers is just as good a candidate as any to lead the league in attempts, you know, and they talked about in the offseason, Anthony Lynn, I think, said he wanted to use Melvin Gordon more in the passing game in our high-stakes league, Mike, where we are sharing a team. I believe we had like the 8th pick, maybe it was, or 7 or 8, something like that. And that was the reason, to be honest, that I leaned towards Melvin Gordon over Leonard Fournette, which is who we were, you know, coming it down to. I thought Melvin Gordon had the chance to catch 55 balls as opposed to Fournette catching 30, 35 balls. And that was the difference for me, him getting 13 targets in week one. Now, I know that's not sustainable. That's like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins territory. But what is sustainable to me is that Phillip Rivers and this Chargers offense, they are going to throw the ball. So I like that they say they see Melvin Gordon as an option in the passing game. Mike, real quick, I do want to ask you about a target share. Corey Davis, 13 targets. He goes 6 for 62 yards. He only catches 6 of the 13 targets. And I wanted to ask you kind of moving forward, because I know you know about this Tennessee offense. LaFleur is the offensive coordinator. Mariota got banged up with the elbow. Does Corey Davis and Delanie Walker's not there anymore. Looks like he's going to miss a significant chunk of time, if not the entire season.
By the way, I think he's done for the year. He had a dislocated ankle and an associated fracture. That's probably, I can't think of anybody who had the exact injury, but that's in the Odell Beckham territory where he had a broken bone at the bottom of his leg near his ankle, and it cost him the rest of the season. Even if it had happened to Odell in week one, he would have been done for the year. So I'll leave it to Dr. A to be the to tell the specifics of the injury, but I'd be very surprised if you see Delanie Walker at all for the rest of this year. But to your point, I know where you're going with your question.
Go ahead.
I think it spells really good news for Corey Davis and Deion Lewis. Obviously, there will be some other targets to go around there, but I think Corey Davis, 13 right out of the gate from two different quarterbacks, but I think it spells good news for Corey Davis owners moving forward.
And then, yeah, I agree. And here's the other thing. Deion Lewis, 21 touches. Derrick Henry, 11 touches. Mike, you know I've been on this Deion Lewis over Derrick Henry train. I've been saying it on this air. I've been saying it on others. If, you know, if Tennessee's offense is struggling a little bit, which it was in Miami, albeit in the weather delays, and they got the kickoff return, that sort of thing. But I could see this being a lot of Deion Lewis as checkdowns kind of underneath if they're going to be this nondescript offense. I was not impressed by what I saw out of Tennessee, Mike.
The only thing I would say is that yesterday was such a unique game with weather delays.
It lasted 10 hours long. Yeah.
Injured quarterbacks. I mean, they had a 2-hour delay right before halftime. Right. Then came back and then did a 5-minute halftime on the field and then came back and played. That game was still going past 7 o'clock at a 1 o'clock kickoff. I think it didn't end till about 7:30 from what I saw. So that's a 6.5-hour time span.
And it wasn't even raining during most of the delay in South Florida.
Yeah, I can't fault them, though. I mean, that really doesn't happen in the NFL. I've seen it happen more in college games, but it does not happen in the NFL that often. But you got,
I think it's happening
delays
more and more over the last couple of years, though. You never saw it 5 years ago. You do see it every now and then.
I'm happy to do a climate change segment at some point as to why that may be happening. But you're right. I think the NFL would get is being smart about keeping fans safer. They don't want a fan to get struck by lightning during a storm where just because they didn't take appropriate caution
sure.
with the delays. But ultimately, I think you do have to throw some of it out. The Walker thing is really bad news. Hopefully Mariota's elbow, it seems like he didn't seem overly concerned about it. It doesn't seem, I mean, obviously a bone's not broken. They wouldn't put him back out there. They x-rayed him. So I think he said he couldn't feel his hand. He had a lot of numbness. So it seems like he got hit pretty hard on his elbow. And I would assume the feeling would come back into his fingers sometime in the next few days and get back out there. But I do think it'll be closer, though, Dane. I don't think Deion Lewis is going to dominate these touches 21 to 11. I don't think that's going to happen over the course of the year. I think Henry will get more touches. They were trailing a little bit, especially late. Deion Lewis got them a really important touchdown late, and then they kicked it off and let the guy score a touchdown,
right.
Jakeem Grant. And then they scored a long touchdown. So it was a really odd game. I'm not panicked yet about the Titans, even though they're my Super Bowl pick. And Atlanta is my other Super Bowl pick, and they both suffered super significant injuries, one defensively to
Keanu Neal
and one to Delanie Walker. So those picks are hit pretty hard early. So, that's it on the Titans. As we keep going through it, a little fist pump for me because people, I think, were trying to worry me, more to the point, about Adam Thielen versus Stephon Diggs. Adam Thielen sees 12 targets. Do you know how many Diggs got?
How many?
Six.
So, yeah, but Diggs had that touchdown.
I get it. I got to play the long game with this. It was a really nice touchdown. I got to play the long game. The reason I would take Thielen over Diggs in drafts is because of the targets. I really want the guy with the ball in his hands. If Thielen ends up with only three or four touchdowns and Diggs ends up with eight or nine, I can eat that. But I want the guy that's more likely to catch 90 passes. Last year it was 91 to 64. I'm hoping it's trending in that direction again. I actually have no Stephon Diggs, and it is not indicative of how I feel about him. I think he's a great player, but he was starting to go really high in drafts, even at points where I was trying to still secure running backs, Dane. Stephon Diggs was going pretty high, so I passed on him a couple of instances because I thought it was a little too early for a guy that may cap out at 75 touches. Does that make sense?
It does. I personally am a fan of Stephon Diggs. I always follow the money they gave Diggs, the extension in the offseason. I think that's important. What I'm intrigued to see, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I would like to see out of the snap counts, like who was in the slot more often, you know, because I think that's going to also dictate, like to your point, I agree with you, Blewett. You know, touchdowns are a fleeting thing, and I'm not going to be the guy who depends on the touchdowns more than like the consistent targets like you're talking about. On a week-to-week basis, that provides the safer floor. I completely agree with you. I just think Stephon Diggs is, you know, one of the best wide receivers in the NFL at the point of the catch, and in terms of kind of being dynamic. You mentioned Mike Wallace earlier in the show. There was a time when Mike Wallace was on the Vikings and said that Stephon Diggs reminded him of Antonio Brown. Now, I know that may be a stretch, but it's not that much of a stretch. I think Diggs is the more electrifying player, but to your point, if Thielen is going to be the tried and true chain mover, then in PPR formats, he offers the safer floor. And you're right, I saw Diggs even go ahead of Thielen. I think, however, they are both, in my opinion, very high-end wide receiver twos.
I think that's fair. I'm hoping wide receiver one conversation, even if it's the lower end. Like I said, the touchdowns may not be there for that. But as we keep going, Alvin Kamara is a top 10 in targets yesterday with 12. I think if we learned anything yesterday from the NFL, it is that when you're playing DFS, just throw in a Saints stack when they're at home.
Sure.
I think you just do it every time. Do it eight times this year. You won't be disappointed. Alvin Kamara, 9 catches for 112 on the 12 targets in just a wild, wacky game. Shout out to the Civil War general look of Ryan Fitzpatrick. DeAndre Hopkins,
right?
Double-digit targets with 11. Emmanuel Sanders, a guy that yesterday, so we were taking calls yesterday. The two guys that came up the most, I'll throw a third one in there. Carlos Hyde came up a lot, but the two receivers that came up a lot were Kenny Stills and Emmanuel Sanders. And most of the time, dependent on the options that we were given, we were recommending both of those guys. Stills we really like because Dane has been sounding this drum for a while. He is the number one wide receiver now. And he probably will remain that because they clearly don't have faith in Devontae Parker for a variety of reasons. So, yeah, he's not going to have games like that every week. But Tannehill threw him a great ball, by the way. I just think there's two guys in the league that I consistently think about at quarterback. Sorry to go off on a tangent here. But Ryan Tannehill and Andy Dalton aren't terrible. And people want to say that they're terrible.
Right.
I get that those two fan bases may want an upgrade because they don't think that those guys can win a Super Bowl. But Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. And their supporting casts aren't good enough right now. But Tannehill and Dalton aren't terrible. And if Tannehill gets shuttled out when Miami blows this thing up at the end of the year, which they may or may not do, then I think he can actually get a starting job somewhere else. Just like Joe Flacco will have a starting job somewhere else next year, too, as they turn the page over to Lamar Jackson. But I'm telling you, Dane, the sharp bettors were on Miami all preseason. The line moved up from 6 to 6.5 on their wins, and it's because they saw some merit in the early games in Miami against Tennessee and the Raiders, and they just felt like the schedule lined up for them. They don't really have any cold weather games. They have a couple later in the year, but normally Miami gets put in bad situations in Buffalo and New England and New York and others. They have some dome games late. They have two cold weather games the whole year, and they lucked out in that regard. And I think yesterday is the type of win where the Sharps are like, see, we're on it with Miami.
Yeah, you know, I buy Andy Dalton a little bit more than Ryan Tannehill. I do agree with you conceptually that fan bases want everybody to be an all-pro, right? And it's okay in the NFL if you have a slightly above-average quarterback, which I believe Andy Dalton has the potential to be. With Miami, yeah, they get the win down at home with the weather delays and stuff, but, you know, they also did need a kickoff return in order to do it. So I'm not buying them just yet, Mike.
Yeah, true. Fair. I'm not saying they're going to the playoffs. We'll keep doing the Target stuff, and then we'll review the DFS lineup that won $1 million from Daily Roto. It's Mike and Dane on FST. We'll be right back.
Marcus Cato is a baseball-loving 20-year-old Californian. In May, he was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia. Marcus now needs a bone marrow transplant from an unrelated donor to survive. The National Bone Marrow Registry is made up of only 7% African Americans, which means Marcus, who is biracial, faces a unique challenge to find a match. Text INVOLVE to 50555 to join DKMS in the fight to help Marcus and others get a second chance at life.
It's Dane and Mike on FST. Excited to be here on this first Monday reviewing some of the games. This show's an hour long. It's only a sprint, so we can only talk about so much. We like to focus on some of the things that we think are important, like targets and all other kinds of good stat stuff to get you started on a Monday morning. We'll talk about Daily Roto and the winning lineup in a minute, but two other things we wanted to get to before we get out of here is that, well, first of all, we're going to brag about our team in full tomorrow. In our high-stakes league, we are sitting on the high score already.
And we still have the Rams defense and Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, by a pretty good margin, we got the high score, nearly 20 points. Our lineup is McCoy, Gordon, Aguilar. But then here it comes. Sanders, Mike Thomas, Rob Gronkowski.
That works.
James Conner, buddy.
Sure does.
I'll give you all the credit in the world for Melvin Gordon. Give me a little slap on the back for James Conner, a guy that I have more than any other player in fantasy football. So we'll see what the Rams and Matt Stafford can do for us. Our bench contained Randall Cobb, actually, so we technically could have played him over Nelson Aguilar, which is something we actually discussed. That was a discussion that we were going to have, whether or not we played Aguilar or Cobb. I think that's
We started McCoy. You got 3 points. You know, we could have had McCoy as a running back and flexed one of these other guys, Randall Cobb, you know, that sort of thing. We had options, but we're sitting pretty. We'll see what the full dominance looks like. Anytime you can get over 200 in a league where the total points matter for playoff seeding, I hope the fantasy executive and our guy Craig Carton can hear us, because we're going to be sitting pretty over 200 points out the gate. But it's only week one.
We actually took a shot late on Ryan Grant, too, from the Colts, and he ends up with 8 catches for 59 yards. So for those people wondering where some of those targets would go in Indianapolis, he's a viable option outside of T.Y. Hilton and Jack Doyle. Looks like Ryan Grant is part of that offense. So we'll keep going through the targets there. The double-digit targets on the day yesterday, DeAndre Hopkins with 11, Emmanuel Sanders with 11, Keenan Allen with 11 targets, T.Y. Hilton with 11 targets, I just mentioned him, Nelson Agholor and Randall Cobb, two of our guys. Like, you have to not get so concerned with the output in a particular week. I get more excited about the fact that they both saw double-digit targets in the first week. They both had 10 on the week.
Yeah, you mentioned Agholor and Randall Cobb. I'm taking it a different way when I look at these 10 target guys. I look at Agholor and Zach Ertz, both for Philadelphia. It is clear to me, especially without Alshon Jeffrey there, that these guys are going to dominate the passing game, okay? There was no real love to Mike Wallace. Dallas Goedert was like not really a thing. You know, he got, I think, like 2 or 3 targets and coughed up one for the interception as well. Sproles, I think, will be the third most targeted guy. I mentioned that going into Thursday, he might get 4 or 5 kind of catches. He's like, you know, a viable, maybe way down in your benches. But to me, Agholor and Ertz didn't look like he had a great game because he only went 5 catches for 48 yards, but 10 targets, and I believe that is sustainable. To me, that's where the Eagles' bread is buttered, and I think that is something that is consistent and will be consistent moving along, maybe a little bit more than, you know, the fact that Ryan Grant or Naheem Hines both got 9 targets for the Colts.
Yeah, Grant, Naheem Hines, and Jack had both had 9. Jack Doyle had 10. I think that's encouraging. Larry Fitzgerald with 10 targets. And then Christian McCaffrey, Demaryius Thomas, the last one with 10 targets. One other guy of note, two other guys of note, just to mention them. Bruce Ellington had 8 targets with Will Fuller, on the sidelines. And Cole Beasley had 8 targets yesterday. I know they were trailing, and Dallas isn't going to want to play like that, but Cole Beasley probably wasn't drafted in some of your leagues out there, and it's just something to consider. I don't know who's on your bench, and it's usually hasty to cut a guy, but if you have Delanie Walker and you had a second tight end, throw Cole Beasley on there. He might be able to guy that can rack up. He's not going to be a touchdown guy or red zone guy, but you know, he's a move the chains guy, an Edelman light, and maybe Dak trusts him a little bit more this year than he did a year ago.
Yeah, and, you know, people were talking about Michael Gallup. Not so much. 1 catch for 9 yards. People were, is the new free agent acquisition Allen Hurns going to be the guy? Nope. 1 catch, 20 yards. What's clear to me is now that Dak doesn't have any of his old friends, and I guess friends is a loose term when it comes to Dez Bryant, but there's so many targets that are out there. He's going to his tried and true guy, and that's Cole Beasley. Big time gap from Cole Beasley down to the rest of the pass catchers in Dallas, although Dak is going to have to complete more than 19 balls for the Cowboys to get on track.
Yeah. They're going to have to run the heck out of the ball and just keep their defense.
And their offensive line is banged up. We mentioned that. We mentioned that blew it. Frederick out. That's a big loss. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a problem. You know, the two guys, we'll talk about Washington, Arizona here in a minute, but the two guys that really stood out yesterday that were like, who are these guys? I'm sure a lot of you are thinking that. Philip Lindsay from the Broncos and Will Disley of the Seahawks, both from the same game. They're really the two surprise fantasy stars, I put in quotes, yesterday. Lindsay sees 17 touches, which was more than Royce Freeman, and he goes for over 100 yards and a score. And conversely, we had somebody tweet at us yesterday, why aren't you guys talking about Nick Vinette? He's going to be a tight end one for the week. And the irony is that Vinette gets 1 touch. Will Disley, 3 for 105 and a score, 66-yard pass is really what made that look good. But let me see where he ended up with targets-wise. He only had 5 targets. And the last guy I'll mention before we go to Washington, Arizona, because there was – I heard Scott say it. I'm not criticizing him yesterday for saying it on the show, but he was saying, I just wonder if they're already turning the page away from Demaryius Thomas, and this could be Cortland Sutton's time to shine. It's not the case yet. Demaryius Thomas had 10 targets. Sutton had 5. So he's part of it, but he's a rookie, and they're just building this thing with Blaine Gabbert. I think with Case Keenum. Sorry, it's a very disrespectful case. I didn't mean to say that.
Is it disrespectful to Case Keenum or to Blaine Gabbert?
To Case Keenum.
Okay. I'm just double checking. Gabbert. I'm just double checking. Listen, Blaine Gabbert might be the starter for your Tennessee Titans now. Blew it. I mean, come on.
God. Oh God. I mean, that's just brutal. When your Super Bowl pick is got Blaine Gabbert at quarterback in week two.
You think they come calling for Teddy Bridgewater? You think anybody comes calling for Teddy Bridgewater?
No. I think the Saints are locked in there. I think there's other calls that can. I think there's other calls that can be made, but I don't know. I don't know.
I like this Lindsay. I don't think Will Disley is a thing, Mike. I don't think Will Disley is a thing. I do think this Philip Lindsay could be a thing. And here's why. Just because of the kind of backs they are, you know, you got to have the yin and the yang, right? I've been saying for a while that I think Royce Freeman is going to be the lead back there in Denver. But Royce Freeman is more of a one cut and go. He's a bigger back. So Denver is in the market for a true kind of PPR guy, you know, and that could be Lindsay. You know, I know people are going to overreact in week one. You know, this is like overreaction Monday. Lindsay is a guy that I would keep on my radar. I wouldn't spend all my fab budget on him right now. I would spend it on TJ Yeldon instead, you know, but he's definitely someone on the radar if he can prove to be a PPR kind of option for the Broncos.
And we'll definitely do a waiver wire review tomorrow on Tuesdays once we get a clearer sense of injury pictures. I know.
Yeah, we need Monday Night Football also. You never know what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, some of you need to put bids in on Tuesday nights for Wednesday pickup. I prefer leagues that do a Wednesday waiver entry for a Thursday pickup, but I'm in all different types of leagues, so I understand your pain. Washington gets the job done yesterday. I mean, they rolled over Arizona in the first half. It was 21-0 at halftime. Arizona just tacks on 6 points late. A David Johnson touchdown. They missed a two-pointer. So David Johnson sees a total of 14 touches for 67 yards. The touchdown certainly helps. I think a couple of guys we talked about yesterday and leading up to the shows that you and I did last week, that if Tyler Eifert and Jordan Reed are on the field, you got to use them. And Jordan Reed was used yesterday. He catches a four-yard touchdown pass. Four touches for 48 and a touchdown. That's a tight end one almost every week, Dane. You don't have to have a Gronk game to be a tight end one, and Jordan Reed was one yesterday.
That's true. What you got to do is catch a touchdown to be a tight end one, right? That's going to come down. You know, the guys
Will
who
Disley.
Score the touchdown, there it is, and that's why he's talked about, right? He's Disley, though, is going to wind up with two touchdowns on the season, and if you're ready to figure out which of the next 16 weeks is that another touchdown, then, you know, I want to ask you about Powerball as well. You know, but yes, Jordan Reed, I think, can be a viable guy. He is there. He got more catches than Jamison Crowder, which was a surprise to me. What I will say, though, Mike, is I'm selling high on Adrian Peterson, okay? Because he's done this before. Remember his debut with this Arizona Cardinals? He had a great game. I think he went for like 130 or something like that. And then he defecated the mattress after that, right? Well, I mean, Adrian Peterson is still, you know, an older back, tread on the tires. And I think, you know, he wanted to do this to prove a former team kind of wrong. He has a nice game, but I don't think this is sustainable. I would sell on Adrian Peterson. And because also you're not going to get the game flow. You're not going to get this game flow with Washington as much either.
Yeah, I didn't play him in the league where I have him. But I do think I think you're right. You can sell pretty high on him right now. But I don't – here two things. I don't think he should touch the ball 28 times a game, and I think they're going to wear him out if they do that. But right. Also, I do think there's a little bit more to this. I think Alex Smith can really engineer this offense in a way that Jay Gruden really wants it to be. And I think Adrian Peterson can be a thing long term. Not these types of games, 166 yards and a touchdown. But I do think there's something to it if you hang on to him. You're already losing depth at running back with Leonard Fournette. So let's talk. I'd let you comment, but let's talk about the Daily Roto thing, because when we talk about the millions of dollars that DailyRoto.com subscribers win playing fantasy sports in these commercials, we're not being facetious or exaggerating at all, because yesterday, DailyRoto.com subscribers skipped bidder on turning a $9 entry into $1 million Sunday. He turned that $9 into a million using the DailyRoto.com NFL DFS Optimizer. I'm part of the Slack chat in the NFL channel in Daily Roto. And people were giving him props and congratulating him. And if you just want to be part of that same community, you can head on over to DailyRoto.com and click on Go Premium and find out how you can party with our successful community. If it's sports wagering you're into, click on the sports betting tab or go to dailyroto.com/betting. You'll be able to use the same tools and algorithms for money line picks, picks against the spread, game totals, and the use of a player props tool that can now be turned loose to forecast spectacular game performances that you can now capitalize on without having to worry about salary caps. It's dailyroto.com and click on Go Premium, the industry website where millionaires are made, literally. So the entry was Ryan Fitzpatrick, Alvin Kamara, James Conner, Michael Thomas, Kenny Stills, DeSean Jackson, Rob Gronkowski, David Johnson, and the Miami defense. The last thing I'll say, we had Colin Drew on here 10 days ago talking about stacks. He said you have to use three players from one team and one from the other. What happened? Michael Thomas, DeSean Jackson, Alvin Kamara, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Michael Thomas, four guys from the same game. That's the way it works, folks. We'll talk to you tomorrow and get in your waiver wire pickups.
And is diagnosed with a blood cancer like leukemia. Bone marrow transplants give patients a new lease on life, but 70% of them must rely on a stranger for one. You can help. Register with DKMS to become a donor. You'll receive a swab kit in the mail, swab your cheeks, send the samples back, and you're good to go. Take the first step. Become a hero. Register today at DKMS.org.